Good evening, everybody. We are in Joshua 23. We're ready to wrap things up. We'll do some brief map review. I've filled in some of the tribe names and a couple of the sanctuary city names. Let's start with the tribes, and let's start on the east side of the river. I've given you East Manasseh and Gad. So what's the other tribe east of the river? Reuben. Okay, easy peasy. So we'll go ahead and fill in Reuben here. We'll have to fill that in off to the side, because I've also given you Bezer, the sanctuary city. Let's do another easy one west of the river. Which tribe is contained entirely inside of Judah? Simeon. Yeah, Simeon is entirely inside of Judah. I need to scoot this over a little bit. All right. So, the Judeans are in the tribe of Judah, yes. All right, immediately north of Judah, we've got one tribe that's bordering the sea and one tribe that's bordering the river. Let's start with the tribe that's bordering the river. Which tribe is that? That's not Dan, it's Benjamin. So the other one is Dan. Except, as we learned a couple weeks ago, the tribe of Dan just kind of gives up on its territory and ends up moving up to the city of Dan, up on the northern end of the tribe. Well, I almost gave it away. Up here in the far north, touching the Jordan River, which tribe is this? Naphtali, yes. So I'll just put a big letter N here. And I tell you, while we're in Naphtali, do y'all remember which sanctuary city is in Naphtali? This one's a little more obscure. The other ones are easier to remember. No, it is actually one that we know about. We'll actually hear about it again in the book of Judges. So I tell you, it starts with a K. I'll give you that. Kedesh, yes. So, actually, I don't know. I'm going to have to curl this around. Ran out of space. The ones that we don't hear about are Golan and Bezer. Let's see. While we're at this, we've got two more sanctuary cities. There's one in Judah and one in Ephraim. Let's start with the one in Judah. Yep, Hebron. And I'll go ahead. Yeah, we'll just mark it like this. Hebron. And then which one's in Ephraim? Shechem, yes. And we'll have to mark this off to the side. We're going to make a return to Shechem hopefully in tonight's reading. All right, so let's finish up with the northern tribes. All right, so we got Naphtali on the far north by the river. Which one is next to it on the coast? Asher, yes. All right, so that leaves these two smaller guys close to the Sea of Galilee. We've got one that is touching the Jordan River, that also touches Manasseh, and then we've got one that is just kind of sandwiched in the middle. Which one touches the Jordan River here? Y'all remember? Starts with an I, yeah. Which one starts with an I? It's Issachar, yeah. Which leaves us the only tribe that we have left on the map. Yeah, this litty bitty one. Not Reuben. Remember, Reuben is east of the river. Zebulun, yes. Z for Zebulun. All right. Let's go ahead and jump into our text. Joshua 23. So these last two chapters, you know, obviously form up the closing of the book. We're going to get a couple of speeches from Joshua. One of them is a farewell address, and the other is part of a covenant ceremony that gets made at the very end of the book. So two speeches, so naturally they kind of fit together. But a lot of what we read in these chapters is also going to tie back to things that we have read in previous chapters, like in chapter 22, we read about the establishment of a memorial that is set up as a witness. That was the altar that the 2.5 tribes built next to the river. There's going to be another witness that is made at the end of the book of Joshua. Even more broadly, the farewell address of this chapter and the covenant ceremony of the next chapter are going to tie the whole book together. We're going to see a lot of recurring themes that reach back to the very beginning of the book of Joshua to kind of wrap things up. So let's go ahead and read through chapter 23. It's a short chapter, and it all goes together. A long time afterward, when the Lord had given rest to Israel from all their surrounding enemies, and Joshua was old and well advanced in years, Joshua summoned all Israel, its elders and heads, its judges and officers, and said to them, I am now old and well advanced in years, and you have seen all that the Lord your God has done to all these nations for your sake. For it is the Lord your God who has fought for you. Behold, I have allotted to you as an inheritance for your tribes those nations that remain, along with all the nations that I have already cut off, from the Jordan to the great sea in the west. The Lord your God will push them back before you and drive them out of your sight. And you shall possess their land just as the Lord your God promised you. Therefore, be very strong to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, turning aside from it neither to the right hand nor to the left, that you may not mix with these nations remaining among you or make mention of the names of their gods or swear by them or serve them or bow down to them. But you shall cling to the Lord your God just as you have done to this day. For the Lord has driven out before you great and strong nations. And as for you, no man has been able to stand before you to this day. One man of you puts to flight 1,000, since it is the Lord your God who fights for you just as he promised you. Be very careful, therefore, to love the Lord your God. For if you turn back and cling to the remnant of these nations remaining among you, and make marriages with them so that you associate with them and they with you, know for certain that the Lord your God will no longer drive out these nations before you, but they shall be a snare and a trap for you, a whip on your sides and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from off this good ground that the Lord your God has given you. And now I am about to go the way of all the earth. And you know in your hearts and souls, all of you, that not one word has failed of all the good things that the Lord your God promised concerning you. All have come to pass for you. Not one of them has failed. But just as all the good things that the Lord your God promised concerning you have been fulfilled for you, so the Lord will bring upon you all the evil things until he has destroyed you from off this good land that the Lord your God has given you, if you transgress the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods and bow down to them. Then the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and you shall perish quickly from off the good land that he has given to you. All right, the text opens with this notice that Joshua is old and well advanced in years. This is the same cue, you'll remember, that we received at the beginning of the inheritance section in chapter 13. All right, so some time had already passed between the conquest and, or at least the beginning of the conquest and the time that the inheritance is divided out. We're already told that he was old and advanced in years, and now he is even more old and more advanced in years, apparently. We're going to learn exactly how advanced in years in chapter 24. And Joshua summarizes in this speech what this generation has seen with their own eyes. That God has been faithful to his covenant, that he has fought for Israel, that he's driven the nations out. Joshua has been faithful. He has allotted the inheritance to Israel. And in this way, by the way, this speech also serves as another conclusion to the inheritance section. Like, that work is done that started in chapter 13. Right, but Joshua's been faithful to do that work, and God has been faithful. And so Joshua commissions Israel to be faithful. Now, I want us to think about this, because this generation is in a pretty unique position. Right? They have seen God working for them and through them in a pretty unique way. And so you would think, all right, this is going to guarantee faithfulness, right? Except, what do we know about their parents' generation? I mean, who were their parents? They're the ones that died in the wilderness, and what did they witness with their own eyes? Yeah, all of these, God's mighty hand against Pharaoh and against Egypt, all these wonders that God performed, they witnessed with their own eyes and still broke faith with God. All right, so Joshua is reminding them of what they have seen. And they have been faithful up to this point. But he's providing them a warning. And this is something that's going to carry us forward into the book of Judges. Because this generation is almost uniquely positioned to remain faithful and to keep Israel as a nation faithful to God. Again, they've seen all these things. They themselves have been doing what God has told them. And yet, we get a lot of reminders that this is no guarantee. All right, in fact, well, the commission for Israel reminds us at the very beginning of the book. Right, so in verse 6, Joshua says, "Therefore, be very strong to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses." All right, and that kind of language, "be very strong," reminds us, I mean, we've heard that language before in the book of Joshua. Right? Where else have we heard this language, "be very strong"? All right, who talking to whom in Joshua? Moses talking to Joshua, maybe at the end of Deuteronomy, but the Lord specifically, yeah, talking to Joshua at the beginning of the book of Joshua, "be very strong," right? He repeats it several times, right? "Be strong and courageous," only "be very strong." And now at the end of the book, Joshua is passing that same commission on to Israel. "You be very strong." All right, so what further obligations does Israel have in the land? Right, if Joshua is looking forward and telling Israel to look forward, that their work is not yet finished, well, what do they have left to do? Huh? Yeah, don't intermarry with the nations. All right, so don't mix with these nations, he talks about in verse 7. What other things? Yeah, finish driving them out. Don't mix with them. Don't make mention of the names of their gods or swear by them or serve them or bow down to them. All right. What other things does Joshua name in this passage? What is Israel supposed to do going forward? Be faithful. All right. Keep and do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses. Cling to the Lord your God, verse 8. I want us to hold on to that one in particular, because that word "cling" is going to come up again. "You shall cling to the Lord your God, just as you have done to this day." Or verse 11, "Be very careful, therefore, to love the Lord your God." All right, because their continued life in the land depends on these kinds of things. In fact, that'll be the topic at the end of this speech. What happens if they do not cling to the Lord? What happens if they do mix with the other nations and break the covenant and make mention of the names of their gods? So we'll get to that in just a second. But I want us to, before we reach the end of this this farewell address, I want us to notice the way that Joshua describes God's promises. particularly regarding the land and driving out the nations. All right, so let's see. Yeah, you've seen, going back up to verse 3, you have seen all that the Lord your God has done to all these nations for your sake, for it is the Lord your God who has fought for you. The Lord has driven out the nations. In fact, in verse 9, he says those very words. For the Lord has driven out before you great and strong nations. As for you, no man has been able to stand before you to this day. All right, so are God's promises regarding the nations fulfilled at this point in Israel's history? Okay, that's something I want us to focus on, because the way that Joshua talks about the Lord's work here is that it's already done and yet not yet done at the same time. All right, the Lord your God has driven them out before you. We also read in verse 5, the Lord your God will push them back before you and drive them out of your sight. This description of God's promise, something you sometimes hear referred to as already but not yet. Right? Has God fulfilled his promises to Israel? Yes. Is that work finished? Not exactly. Right? It doesn't exactly fit into a simple, yes, it's definitely this thing or this thing. It's kind of both things at the same time. And what it comes down to is what Wayne mentioned just a moment ago, Israel's compliance in things. Because God has been faithful, and in fact, God is so faithful that even that which is not yet accomplished, Israel can still consider as done, right, as far as God is concerned. Is God going to do his part? Well, yeah, God's part has already been done. It ultimately is on Israel. Wayne, I thought I saw your hand. Okay. All right, so, and again, this kind of permeates the way that this chapter talks about the nations in the land. We're told that Israel has rest from their enemies, right? The inheritance has been allotted. The Lord has driven the nations out. But a remnant of the nations remains. It remains to Israel to finish pushing them out, to finish possessing the land. So even though the inheritance has been allotted, it's not been fully taken possession of yet. I want us to pay attention to this, because this is pretty consistent with the way that the Bible often talks about God's promises, including in the New Testament, talking about the promise of God today. Right? So the promise of salvation, for example, is something. Well, let me just ask this question. Is the promise of salvation, has God already fulfilled the promise of salvation to us? Yes, in what sense? And this should be an obvious sense to us. He gave us, yeah, Christ died on the cross, right? So the work of salvation has already been completed. And yet, is there a sense in which the work of salvation has yet to be completed? There's a pretty obvious sense in which sometimes the kingdom gets talked about in this way as well, right? Like the kingdom is here, and yet what we have in the here and now is not the fullest fulfillment of God's kingdom. Right, we await a future day when God's kingdom will be established in the fullest sense. So is God's kingdom here? Already, but not yet. Right? This kind of pattern gets started here in Joshua. That God has fulfilled his promises, and yet there is still some to be done. Rena? Yes, the question always is, will we respond in covenant faith to God? Right? It's never a question of, is God going to be faithful to his promises? It's always a question of our faithfulness. So, excellent. All right, so Joshua closes the speech out in verse 14, "Now I'm about to go the way of all the earth." Right, in other words, you know that I'm about to die. And I want us to pay attention to what Joshua reminds Israel of here at the end of the speech. All right, you know in your hearts and souls, all of you, that not one word has failed of all the good things that the Lord your God promised concerning you. All have come to pass for you. Not one of them has failed. All right, the blessings of the covenant are real. They are there. You've seen them. You have received them. But just as all the good things that the Lord your God promised concerning you have been fulfilled for you, so the Lord will bring upon you all the evil things until he has destroyed you from off this good land that the Lord your God has given you, if you transgress the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods and bow down to them. Then the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and you shall perish quickly from off the good land that he has given you. All right, so this looks back to the blessings and curses of the law of Moses, right? Specifically places like Deuteronomy 28, right, where the blessings for covenant obedience and the curses for covenant disobedience are laid out in this really lengthy section that includes all kinds of horrible things for disobedience, like you're going to eat your own babies, that kind of thing. And Joshua reminds them of that. This is going to be alluded to during the covenant ceremony in chapter 24 also, by the way, that if they cling to the nations rather than clinging to the Lord, like Joshua told them earlier in the speech, if you cling to the nations instead, you're going to perish off the land. All right, so they've seen with their own eyes the blessings of covenant obedience. If they cease being obedient, then the anger of the Lord is going to be kindled against them, and they will perish from the land. They will receive the curses instead of the blessings. They've seen this, too, over the course of their generation. They saw it with Achan. Right? What happens whenever you break faith with the Lord? What happens when one guy in Israel breaks faith with the Lord? The whole nation suffers for it. So that's just a little taste. What happens with Achan is a little taste of the curses that await them for covenant disobedience. All right, any questions or comments about Joshua's farewell address before we continue on to the covenant ceremony? Wayne, I saw your hand. Mm-hmm. 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 It makes me think of the letters to the angels of the seven churches in Revelation. I don't remember off the top of my head which church it is. There's a couple of churches that are harboring, you know, sinners in them. And remember that Jesus doesn't just threaten the individual sinners, but threatens the whole congregation. So, again, not talking about, hey, everybody else in the church is going to be condemned to hell. It's that, hey, things are not going to go well for this congregation, right? I'm going to bust you up, in other words. I think that's the parallel that jumps out in my mind, just right off the top of my head. So, there is a congregational sense to it. I think that's the way it's presented in the New Testament. And again, well, and turning back to, I think we looked at this, what, on Sunday? Like in 1 Corinthians 5, you know, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. there are congregation-wide consequences for individual sin in the congregation. Right? It doesn't necessarily have to do with everybody's personal salvation, right? But there's a whole lot that goes on in this world between us and God besides our personal salvation. Right?
So, taking that back,
mm-hmm.
I think the tradition of the day, they were conquered all the time. Now they didn't end up in all individuals. So, when I'm trying to get at,
So the whole book of Judges is going to show us what happens to Israel whenever a little sin gets in the camp. Because it's going to continue radiating out. In fact, that's going to be the climax of the book of Judges. Is you're going to have one rotten town in Israel that is going to do some unspeakably horrible things. And it's going to lead to a civil war that that nearly destroys one of the tribes.
It's just interesting how that concept comes up between the Old Testament and New Testament where it's one, and then all of it was the other thing, it was one of the neighbor.
Yeah, I would need to chew on that a bit, I think.
Yeah.
So, good questions. All right, any other questions or comments before we move forward? All right, Joshua 24. Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem and summoned the elders, the heads, the judges, and the officers of Israel. And they presented themselves before God. And Joshua said to all the people, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, long ago your fathers lived beyond the Euphrates, Terah, the father of Abraham and of Nahor, and they served other gods. Then I took your father Abraham from beyond the river and led him through all the lands of Canaan, through all the land of Canaan, and made his offspring many. I gave him Isaac, and to Isaac I gave Jacob and Esau, and I gave Esau the hill country of Seir to possess. But Jacob and his children went down to Egypt. And I sent Moses and Aaron, and I plagued Egypt with what I did in the midst of it, and afterward I brought you out. Then I brought your fathers out of Egypt, and you came to the sea. And the Egyptians pursued your fathers with chariots and horsemen to the Red Sea. And when they cried to the Lord, he put darkness between you and the Egyptians, and made the sea come upon them and cover them. And your eyes saw what I did in Egypt. And you lived in the wilderness a long time. Then I brought you to the land of the Amorites, who lived on the other side of the Jordan. They fought with you, and I gave them into your hand, and you took possession of their land, and I destroyed them before you. Then Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, arose and fought against Israel. And he sent and invited Balaam, the son of Beor, to curse you. But I would not listen to Balaam. Indeed, he blessed you. So I delivered you out of his hand. And you went over the Jordan and came to Jericho, and the leaders of Jericho fought against you, and also the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, and I gave them into your hand. And I sent the hornet before you, which drove them out before you, the two kings of the Amorites. It was not by your sword or by your bow. I gave you a land on which you had not labored, and cities that you had not built, and you dwell in them. You eat the fruit of vineyards and olive orchards that you did not plant." All right, this final chapter of the book is going to record a covenant ceremony. In fact, it's going to tell us this explicitly in verse 25, that a covenant is being cut as part of this ceremony. And Joshua gathers Israel to Shechem for this ceremony. All right, so first off, we know where Shechem is. It's the sanctuary city in Ephraim. One thing the text doesn't mention to us, I think we're just expected to know, is what is nearby Shechem, or exactly where Shechem is situated. Shechem lies in a valley in between two mountains, and you know these mountains, Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. This is the very same place where the blessings and curses of the law were read out in Joshua chapter 8. In fact, we can go back there briefly. real quick. This is something, remember, it's prescribed in the Law of Moses, in Deuteronomy. And in Joshua chapter 8, Joshua fulfills this requirement of the law. In verse 30, at that time Joshua built an altar to the Lord, the God of Israel, on Mount Ebal, just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded the people of Israel, as it is written in the book of the Law of Moses, an altar of uncut stones upon which no man has wielded an iron tool. And they offered on it burnt offerings to the Lord and sacrificed peace offerings. And there, in the presence of the people of Israel, he wrote on the stones a copy of the Law of Moses, which he had written. And all Israel, sojourner as well as native-born, with their elders and officers and their judges, stood on opposite sides of the ark before the Levitical priests who carried the ark of the covenant of the Lord, half of them in front of Mount Gerizim, and half of them in front of Mount Ebal, just as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded at the first, to bless the people of Israel. And afterward he read all the words of the law, the blessing and the curse, according to all that is written in the book of the law. There was not a word of all that Moses commanded that Joshua did not read before all the assembly of Israel, and the women, and the little ones, and the sojourners who lived among them. All right, so Israel has already been here before. And Joshua, at the end of his life, calls them back to Shechem, between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, for this covenant ceremony. And here, for one of the first times in Scripture, we get a full recounting of the whole history of God's people. We get something similar at the beginning of Deuteronomy, where Moses recounts the entire Exodus. But here, if I'm right about this, I think this is the first time that we get the entire covenant history of Israel up to this point, going all the way back to Abraham. The first time that it's told out in public. So this is a covenant history. It starts with God's calling Abraham out from his home and making promises to him. It focuses on the way that God has followed his people, that he has blessed these people, that he's kept his word to them. And it comes all the way down, this history does, to its present hearers. And it's going to result in a call to faithfulness in the very next passage. The thing I want us to notice about this is that this is the same formula that we see used a couple of times in the book of Acts for presenting the gospel. Right, Stephen does the same thing in Acts chapter 7. You get a covenant history of Israel, starting with Abraham and coming all the way down to Stephen's present audience. Right, and it's at that point that Stephen's present audience stones him to death. Paul does something similar in Acts chapter 13 as he is presenting the gospel. He starts with Abraham and he brings the covenant history of God all the way down to the time of Christ. All right, so Joshua is starting an important pattern here. And it's going to result in a call to maintain faith with the Lord. Just as, well, we'll say if Paul's sermon in Acts 13 ends in a call for covenant faithfulness. Stephen's would have if they hadn't cut it short with rocks. But let's continue in Joshua's covenant speech in Joshua 24:14. Now therefore, fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your fathers served in the region beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Then the people answered, far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. For it is the Lord our God who brought us and our fathers up from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, and who did those great signs in our sight and preserved us in all the way that we went and among all the peoples through whom we passed. And the Lord drove out before us all the peoples, the Amorites who lived in the land. Therefore we also will serve the Lord, for he is our God. But Joshua said to the people, you are not able to serve the Lord, For he is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions or your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, then he will turn and do you harm and consume you after having done you good. And the people said to Joshua, "No, but we will serve the Lord." Then Joshua said to the people, "You are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen the Lord to serve him." And they said, "We are witnesses." He said, "Then put away the foreign gods that are among you, and incline your heart to the Lord, the God of Israel." And the people said to Joshua, "The Lord our God we will serve, and his voice we will obey." So Joshua made a covenant with the people that day and put in place statutes and rules for them at Shechem. And Joshua wrote all these words in the book of the law of God. And he took a large stone and set it up there under the terebinth that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. And Joshua said to all the people, "Behold, this stone shall be a witness against us, for it has heard all the words of the Lord that he spoke to us. Therefore it shall be a witness against you, lest you deal falsely with your God." So Joshua sent the people away, every man to his inheritance. All right, so Joshua finishes his covenant speech by calling on Israel to maintain faith with the Lord. Because God has been faithful, they are to be faithful. And Israel responds that they will be faithful. And this begins as a really long back and forth between Israel and Joshua. Joshua intensifies the call. He says, "You will not be able to serve God." Right? In fact, our ESV puts it in the present tense. You are not able to serve the Lord, for he is a holy God. And Israel responds that they will be faithful again. And Joshua says that they are witnesses against themselves in the event of any disobedience. And Israel responds once more that, yes, we are witnesses against ourselves. And so Joshua admonishes them yet again to keep the covenant, and Israel swears for a final time that they shall keep the covenant. All right, so they've implicated themselves pretty deeply in this, right? It's like, imagine, imagine if you are, you're faced with one of those end-user license agreements, right? The kind that nobody really reads and pays attention to, and except this time, instead of just asking you, "Do you agree with the terms?" it asks you like 3 or 4 or 5 times, "All right, are you sure you've read this? You realize that this is very serious. You are witness against yourself that you are actually going to abide by this. Are you really sure that you want to get into this?" That's what Joshua does with Israel. He goes through again and again and again, and Israel each time comes back and accepts the terms and says, "Yes, we will follow the Lord." Wayne?
I find it so interesting. The term, "How it expresses it." And it's very telling. Okay, when he says, "Then put away the foreign gods that are among you."
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. And that I think is a really important point, because it's easy, especially in the book of Joshua, to get kind of blinded by the bright lights. Right? Israel is so obedient and so faithful. You know, you just want to... Joshua gives you this really kind of Pollyanna attitude about Israel. Oh man, Israel is doing so good. Everything's going to be okay. But then the book gives you these occasional peeks at cracks in the armor, as it were. You know, these little notes that we got earlier in the book about, oh yeah, this people, they failed to drive out the Jebusites from Jerusalem. And The tribe of Dan, well, yeah, this was their inheritance before they left it. You know, and they just, the book throws in these little things. And this is another one of those little things. You shall put away these gods.
You shall. You never look forward. You say, put them away.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just very...
Right. It's, it, at least in terms of whether or not they are there, it's not forward-looking, it's present-looking. Right, because and we know that it's the case because we've seen it happen before the book of Joshua, that Israel has had this problem. And so we shouldn't think that for the duration of the book of Joshua, it's just suddenly poof, disappeared. And we're going to see this blow up in Israel's face in the book of Judges. All right, so Joshua memorializes this covenant, this oath that Israel has made before the Lord. He records their covenant in the book of the law, and he sets up another memorial stone to act as a witness of the covenant. So this kind of parallels the altar out close to Gilgal, right? Another memorial, another witness, except in this case, all right, so the altar that's set up by the river is a witness between the eastern tribes and the western tribes that the Lord is God. This new witness memorial in Shechem is witness against Israel, that they have accepted the Lord as their God. Right? This stone, it's really interesting the way that Joshua phrases this. Look, this stone has heard all of our words here. Right? This rock was listening. It knows. We're going to set it up as a witness against us, against you, lest you deal falsely with your God. All right, this covenant ceremony equips us to understand, I think, the rest of Israel's history, and especially, most importantly, the message of the gospel. All right, because what Joshua proclaims in this covenant address holds true. Israel is not able to serve God in the way that he demands. God is too holy for Israel. And God is true to his word in the law. For Israel's transgressions, God curses Israel. Right, that's basically the story of Israel from here on out, is how their transgressions lead to them receiving the curses of the law of Moses. And the thing is, Israel swore themselves to this. Again, we see them do it like half a dozen times in this chapter. They swear themselves to this. We can almost hear echoes here of his blood be on us and on our children. Right? They're calling things down on themselves more powerful than they can imagine. And the whole history of Israel is the fallout of this arrangement. God is always faithful to his covenant, and Israel is not because they cannot be. And so, as a result, Israel is cursed. And this shows us the absolute necessity of the gospel. All right, the gospel is not just some arbitrary thing that comes around later and God says, oh, you know, all of this, you know, these many hundreds of years of history with Israel, oh, wasn't that fun? Just did that on a lark. Here's the real plan. Right? The gospel is a... in some, this is setting up for us to understand the gospel. Right? Why the gospel is necessary. We see this kind of thing, by the way, in Hebrews, which we studied last year. We see it all through Paul. Just to give us an example, turn to Galatians chapter 3. We're going to hear some echoes of this covenant speech that Joshua has given us in Galatians chapter 3. Verse 10. Paul says, "For all who rely on works of the law are under a curse. For it is written, cursed be everyone who does not abide by all the things written in the book of the law and do them." All right, that's Israel. That's the story of Israel. That's what Israel has just signed up for in Joshua 24. That they are going to be faithful. They are going to do all the things written in the book of the law. But the problem is, they won't. They can't. Now, it is evident that no one is justified before God by the law, for the righteous shall live by faith. But the law is not of faith, rather the one who does them shall live by them. And of course, that is the central problem. Why Christ had to die comes down to what we have heard in this covenant ceremony. All right, let's, just to wrap everything up, let's just finish reading the last few verses of the book. After these things, Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old. And they buried him in his own inheritance at Timnath-Serah, which is in the hill country of Ephraim, north of the mountain of Gaash. Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua and had known all the work that the Lord did for Israel. As for the bones of Joseph, which the people of Israel brought up from Egypt, they buried them at Shechem in the piece of land that Jacob bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of money. It became an inheritance of the descendants of Joseph. And Eleazar the son of Aaron died, and they buried him at Gibeah, the town of Phinehas his son, which had been given him in the hill country of Ephraim. All right, so the generation of leaders that conquered and allotted the land dies. They are buried in the land. In fact, Joshua dies at the same age that Joseph died at the end of Genesis. And Joseph, his bones are returned to Israel, and he is buried in the promised land. And that's how everything closes. Israel is faithful, but now the leaders of that generation are dead, and it's an open question what is going to happen next. So thank you so much for your kind attention and your questions and comments this evening.